The city of La Crosse has filed a lawsuit against 23 chemical manufacturers, including DuPont and 3M, claiming the companies knowingly sold products containing toxic PFAS chemicals, which have been linked to thyroid disease, certain cancers, and other health problems. It comes after the DNR detected elevated levels of PFAS at 40 private wells in the town of Campbell near the La Crosse Regional Airport last October. The site had previously been used to test firefighting foam containing the chemical. Earlier this year, residents of the town of Peshtigo reached a $17.5 million settlement with Tyco Fire Products for PFAS contamination in groundwater there. Other municipalities around the country have taken similar action, as many states and the federal government have yet to put legal standards for the chemicals in place. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have PFAS chemicals or other types of water pollution affected you and your family? Where do you place the blame for this kind of contamination? Do you think chemical manufacturers in these cases should be held accountable? Do you want to see tougher rules and enforcement from the state and or federal governments? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. In just a bit, we'll look at the issue on a national scale. Tim Cabot joins us now. He's the mayor of La Crosse. Mayor Cabot, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little more about the PFAS pollution problems you found in your area?
Right. We have a situation at our La Crosse Regional Airport from decades of training as well as incidents at the airport that required us to utilize the firefighting foam containing PFAS. And the irony of the situation, of course, is that the FAA, the federal government, mandates all airports to use the type of firefighting foam containing PFAS. We used it for decades, not knowing that it ultimately was going to be harmful, and that is part of our lawsuit, that the chemical manufacturers knew that and continue to manufacture and sell it to us. And that, unfortunately, has caused us problems, not only with two municipal wells that we've had to shut down, and those are no longer producing water for us, but we have investigated private wells south of the airport and have tested more than 100 wells and have found PFAS in about 40% of those wells south of the airport. We're providing bottled water to those households now.
Yeah, can you talk about, you mentioned a couple wells shut down, bottled water. What kind of remediation efforts are there or could there be, and what does that kind of thing cost?
Well, right now it's a little bit too early to tell just because of the complexities that we're trying to address. We are still trying to get a total understanding of the extent of the contamination. We feel like we have a pretty good understanding on the PFAS that are coming from and related to the La Crosse Regional Airport. The complicating factor, we've got wells that are outside of the plume from the airport that are now testing at levels that are causing issues. So we have asked, actually, a group of us here have asked the state to help us to determine and better understand and identify the extent of the contamination, because we take this very seriously and, you know, we're giving this a very high priority. We've asked the state to assist us because we simply cannot go it alone to try to identify the extent of the contamination. We learned a few years ago that one of our municipal wells had contained a PFAS, and so we immediately took it offline. Based on our work with the DNR, subsequent to that, you know, we learned of potentially several sites on the airport, one from training area, a couple others from either spills or from storage, that we investigated further. And we did find that PFAS, unfortunately, has migrated into the groundwater from those locations.
What are you hoping to achieve now with this lawsuit against almost two dozen chemical companies?
Well, we're really wanting to hold the manufacturers of these chemicals accountable and to have them pay for the mitigation and the corrections that are needed. We have two wells in the municipal system here in La Crosse. We have hundreds potentially of private wells of our neighbors in the town of Campbell that need a long-term solution. And we feel that it's only right, especially that the fact that these manufacturers knew of the harm and continue to manufacture and sell the product. So we feel it's all, our lawsuit is really a step towards holding them accountable and to ultimately getting the relief that all of our residents are looking for, which is clean drinking water, to you know, correct the problems from the past, and then make sure that going forward we don't have any of these issues.
Now, as I mentioned, residents in the town of Peshtigo on the opposite side of the state from you have had a lawsuit. You've got this now. Do you have advice for other communities that might be concerned about these issues that are maybe already finding these chemicals in their water?
Well, I would encourage them to do what we did, which was to file suit with or against the manufacturers, because again, at the local level, our budgets have already been decimated because of COVID from this past year, and we don't have the resources to be able to really do the testing, the investigations, the provisions of emergency water supply, and ultimately we need those manufacturers who created these chemicals to address that. So I would encourage other communities to try to join forces, like we are here in La Crosse area, again, to hold these companies accountable for their actions.
Mayor Cabot, thanks again for joining us today.
You bet, Rob. Thank you.
Tim Cabot is the mayor of La Crosse. He talked to us about the city's lawsuit against 23 chemical manufacturers after elevated levels of PFAS chemicals were found in 40 private wells near the city's airport. Now we turn to Deborah Sivas. She's a professor of environmental law and director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford University. Deborah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Well, we just talked to the mayor of La Crosse about that city's lawsuit here. Is this a common kind of lawsuit we're seeing around the country when it comes to things like PFAS and other kinds of water contamination?
It's becoming more and more common. So kind of starting several years ago with the MTBE and gasoline set of lawsuits, that and those were very successful. So as we learn more about other contaminants in the environment, and particularly in water, they're becoming much more common across the country.
And I mentioned in our town of Peshtigo here in Wisconsin, there was a lawsuit filed by a group of community residents. In this case, it was actually by a governmental agency. Do we see a lot of different stakeholders taking the lead on these kind of suits?
Yes, absolutely. So sometimes it's private parties, but you know, these are very expensive lawsuits to fund. So sometimes it's class actions with a number of private parties. But more and more frequently, it's local governments and even state governments looking to recoup the cost that they need to spend to try to clean up these contaminants in the environment. So this is, especially at the local level, becoming really a model for trying to get the manufacturers to start paying some of these costs.
One big question here that seems like it might be harder to prove in a court of law. I mean, obviously these companies made and sold these chemicals, but this particular lawsuit charges that they knew of the toxic effects of these chemicals, the danger they could pose to water supplies. Is that something that can be difficult to prove in court, that foreknowledge of the risks?
Yeah, it can be quite difficult at times. And there are other claims, I think, in both this lawsuit and others across the country that don't depend on kind of that foreknowledge. But that is really where the ball game is these days. And everything from tobacco, you know, to PCBs in water, to some of the new climate legislation, that all of that suite of lawsuits is trying to prove that the manufacturers or the actors knew of the danger and in some way covered it up or hid it. And, you know, the way once you file a lawsuit, one of the things you get to do as a plaintiff is to take discovery. That is to request documents and depose individuals and stuff. And that's one of the ways that the parties are able to develop those facts. What is the history? And the companies have to comply with all of that. And in fact, that was the way that the big tobacco lawsuits eventually shook out, was learning that the tobacco companies had for decades covered up their knowledge.
I remember a controversial point here in Wisconsin when it came to a lead paint lawsuits was the question of, do you have to establish that company's brand of paint damaged this particular, in most cases, kid? Is that an issue in this kind of lawsuit? Does a community like La Crosse have to establish that this plume of PFAS material came from this particular company's product?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so we have this concept in tort liability and in personal injury liability of joint and several liability. And historically, it's been difficult to trace an injury to one particular manufacturer, one particular product. But I think as these other cases have shown across the country in the pollution context, the courts are allowing the plaintiffs to go after a set of actors, so several manufacturers of a product, for instance, and then finding liability on a joint and several basis, and then generally allocating damages to the extent that's done on the basis of what was their market share of the particular product.
We're picking up our talk now with Deborah Sievis, director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford University, talking about legal accountability for pollution after the city of La Crosse filed a suit against 23 companies after finding 40 private wells contaminated with PFAS chemicals. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how these kind of environmental lawsuits work? Is this something that's been an issue in your own community with this or another kind of pollution? Have you been involved in community action or a case like this? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Deborah, I wonder, you know, could a company say, well, hold on, the EPA didn't regulate this chemical. The FAA actually required its use at airports. Is that some coverage for them for liability if the government didn't regulate the product and actually in some cases mandated its use?
Sure. I think the companies will absolutely make those arguments and assert those defenses. You know, historically, as we see these cases play out, they have not been that effective, particularly as we were talking about earlier, where there's some showing that the company knew there were problems with the product or dangers associated with the project, with the products. But so that'll all be fought out in court, assuming it doesn't go to some kind of settlement. These are cases where a jury decides who's credible there. So they'll certainly make those arguments. Whether they'll be successful is a different question.
In an environmental law case like this, is this something where it usually ends up going to a jury trial, or do we often see settlements reached before it gets to that point?
Almost always settlements. Occasionally they go to jury trials. But of course, it's a big gamble for the companies because, as we know, juries can be all over the place. And one of the things, and I believe this case alleges it too, is not only damages to compensate for the cost of cleaning up or the cost of injury, but also punitive damages where to try to create a deterrent for the company. And punitive damages are just a very big unknown. And so, especially once you maybe get one jury verdict, usually the industry's coming to the table pretty quickly to try to get a settlement. And often trying to get a blanket settlement that might forestall other lawsuits across the country.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Ladysmith. John, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, John?
Well, there's a paper mill up in this area that gets recycled paper in that they take the ink out of this paper. And, you know, they get thousands of gallons of chemicals in a month to de-ink this paper. And all of the sludge from this de-inking process is being spread onto farm fields up in this area. I just wondered if there was ever a test done on this sludge to see if it was okay to spread or what's going to be the impact here in 20 years. When they start finding that in the groundwater.
Gotcha, John. Thanks a lot for the call. I don't know if you know about this particular situation, Deborah, but when somebody in a community sees something and they're wondering, is this harmful? Is this something that's going to be a problem in 20 years? What kind of things can community members do to start to check that out and see if there's a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know much about the specifics of the paper recycling, but absolutely, you want to talk to your, probably starting at the community level with your public health folks and your environmental regulators at the community level. And they may or may not know about what's going on. Ultimately, the state government and then the federal EPA have jurisdiction over most of those kind of activities. And so you want to just elevate it up. And, you know, historically, we've had things like Love Canal where the regulators weren't paying very much attention. It wasn't until the community really became active and collectively raised these issues that they really got attention. So you want to start and make that happen.
Thanks for that call, John, at 800-642-1234. Julie joins us now in Kewaskum. Julie, hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Julie?
I live outside of Wisconsin, or Kewaskum, where there's a dump that Regalware and West Bend Company, according to the neighbors, have been rumored to have dumped things, chemicals and things into the town of Kewaskum, the old dump there. I live on a 1 mile dead end road with 9 houses on it, and there's an extremely high rate of cancer, including my household. The gentleman we bought from died at 53. 2 people in my household have developed cancer. And I'm wondering, is there a way, how do we go about, number one, getting our water tested for this PFAS? And also, the dump area.
Julie, thanks for the call, and I'm very sorry for what's happening with your family. Again, Deborah, this is at the early stage where someone suspects a chemical causing, in this case, direct harm to loved ones. Where can they start with something like that?
Yeah, again, I think it's local public health officials, and that sounds like that's what's happening. That's what kind of led to this lawsuit that we're talking about today, and especially because those communities might want to be joining in on some of these lawsuits and having the evidence to see that there's a problem in their own community is important. So I would start at the local public health environmental regulator level. They can often get people out to test the water, test the wells if the neighborhood's on wells, or test the water that's beneath the homes there.
Thanks for that call, Julie, and best to your family members. We're talking to Deborah Sievis from Stanford University, director there of the Environmental Law Clinic, talking about lawsuits over chemical pollution, starting with the La Crosse lawsuit over these PFAS chemicals in their area, also the town of Peshtigo. Residents there had a lawsuit along the same lines. Back to your calls now. Carrie is with us in Dodge County. Carrie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Here I live, we have at least 2 very, very large CAFOs, and I know there are parts of Wisconsin that have had lawsuits against these farms, known to not only pollute the water, but drag on the water system and the wells, and our water here is bad, but we are fortunate enough that I live close enough to an artesian well, and I actually fill up 5-gallon jugs of water every 3 weeks, and that's what we drink, that's what we cook with. That's what I give my dog. I wonder if there's anything being done about these massive farms.
I
know it's probably not a popular opinion in the dairy state, but my thing is, we can live without dairy. We can't live without water. And it's very scary to me.
Thanks a lot for the call, Carrie. Deborah, a big issue, these large livestock farms in Wisconsin. And there's arguments now about the extent to which they might pollute water in areas like Carrie's. Have you seen lawsuits related to these larger livestock farms and water?
Yes, absolutely. And those tend to be slightly different than the La Crosse lawsuit, which is based kind of on common law theories of product liability and nuisance and trespass. But CAFOs are actually regulated by the U.S. EPA and presumably through the state environmental agency as well. And they are supposed to have permits, and there's supposed to be requirements on them. I do know that because I've worked with some folks who are looking for kind of hidden CAFOs, and I do know there are those out there that aren't being regulated. So the first thing is to get those, if they're not in the system, is to get them in the system by trying to talk to your environmental regulators. And then if they do have permits, they have to be testing and self-reporting, and that all that information is available to the public. And I think the way that some of these CAFOs are being cleaned up is people are bringing citizen suits under the Clean Water Act to try to stop the pollution that's going on. So that's a different route, but also a legal one.
Thanks for that call, Carrie. In our last minute, Deborah, that raises a question. Lawsuits are in effect after the fact enforcement. Do we need more regulation and or before the problem happens enforcement?
Yeah, well, I would say yes, because we get these situations where we suddenly discover, like PFAS, that there's massive contamination everywhere. And in fact, the EPA has started to move on this. So they're proposing some regulations. I don't believe they're finalized yet, but they're proposing regulations under the Safe Drinking Water Act, potentially under the Clean Water Act and the Toxic Substances Control Act. So they do have the authority to do all of this. I think the problem is these chemicals, sometimes we don't realize what's going on. And I would say that the regulators are often come very late to the game. So they're not doing proactive, what chemicals should we be regulating? They start regulating after the horse is already out of the barn. So it's very frustrating, I think. And that's what these lawsuits are about, like trying to get manufacturers to really step up and think about this before they continue to sell a dangerous product.
Deborah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Deborah Sivas is a professor of environmental law and director of the Environmental Law Clinic at Stanford University. She talked with us about the legal options available to hold manufacturers accountable for different kinds of environmental pollution. Earlier, we talked to La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot about the city's lawsuit against 23 chemical companies related to PFAS contamination of private wells near the La Crosse Airport.